Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today I have with me Paul Mitchell, and as a lot of you know, Paul and I have worked together for many years, supporting the Reiki community, and especially the community that we both hold and teach, Usui Shiki Ryoho. And I have the great pleasure of interviewing Paul today. In our conversations, we always go to a kind of philosophic place often, and we had this talk about cosmology of Reiki years and years ago, and it actually was, I think, the seed that planted this idea in my head about a cosmology of Reiki. And over the years, it's appeared over and over. And now, in my opinion, it's come into its own time, this thought. So I'm really happy to have Paul on the show. And Paul, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I know that you've been thinking about this topic for a while, so I just think I won't ask you a question. I'll just have you start whatever your thoughts have been.
Well, in truth, it's I find myself really in this area of exploration where I feel like, in one sense, I'm in the dark looking for the light, which is an analogy actually that you used many, many years ago in talking about Reiki. And so one of the things that I see for myself, from my own experience, is that I was raised with, I would say, quite a comprehensive cosmology, in that I was raised in a Christian Catholic tradition. And then Reiki came into my life. And the experience of Reiki was that I felt a connection, a transcendent connection, that then suddenly enabled me to make sense in a whole different way of the cosmology that I was brought up with. And so it was, this ongoing kind of awakening experience. Remembering things that I had been taught or that I was, in my religious upbringing. Oh, that's what it means. Oh. That's what it means. Oh, I understand this much better. So in one sense, Reiki, well, at the heart, Reiki gave me this depth of connection with the divine. And in my practice over the years, I saw this continued process of awakening, of understanding what my life was about and issues of life, like suffering and loss and purification and growing faith and trust in life. And yet, what I received in Reiki was, I would say, kind of content thin. I was given a simple practice, and I was given a set of five principles. And then I worked to make sense of what I felt like my experience of Reiki was teaching me or awakening in me. And the experience was that often how I saw the world or understood the world or understood my life or life in general, the concepts that I navigated by would be continually shaken or shattered. And so then I was challenged to look for a broader, deeper understanding. And so, you know, one of the things that I did was read and study more. So I found myself, you know, reading, you know, books from Buddhist teachers, and then eventually more deeply going into Christian thought, especially from the Christian mystical traditions and things like that. And so it feels like my practice of Reiki just propels me to keep looking for and or to keep broadening the context through which I understand life, and in my understanding of life, which I imagine is what we mean by cosmology, one of the things we mean by cosmology, my understanding of life then gives me a place, gives me clear and clear direction to navigate my life by. And so that's what came off the top of my head. Now, if you have questions, that might be helpful to focus me a bit.
Uh-huh. Okay. I have a question about, you just said that you were led, or your practice of Reiki brought you to a place where you needed to relook or rethink about some of your basic ideas about how life worked. Is that true? Am I misquoting you?
No, I think that's really accurate.
Uh-huh. Could you give me an example of one of those?
Well, let's see. You know, I felt like in my practice of Reiki and in the process of healing, I really had to focus on and look at my own power and my own kind of responsibility for my life, my own capacity to make my life what I wanted it to be. And it, you know, it brought me into, you know, deep process of kind of healing the wounds of limitation and the wounds of not being enough and the wounds of feeling like I was tragically flawed or whatever, all those wounds. And really to take, both responsibility for and to acknowledge, the power, the creative power that I had. And I worked that for a long time. And then suddenly I realized that it wasn't enough. And I, you know, the focus on my being, you know, kind of a creator of my life wasn't enough. And then, what happened was that I went to this other place of surrender, or another, I would say, aspect of paradox of life, where I realized that that I'm also, even in my power, I'm also helpless. that my life is totally dependent from moment to moment on some greater force that I'm held in life and in this form by something other than me. And so I needed to have a bigger picture, which was that I needed to be able to live with this tension of being potent and powerful and helpless. You know, at any moment my life could end. And that everything that came, came as a gift, as grace. And so it's like living in these two dynamics, was a huge awakening. And now I'm wondering if I answered your question.
Me too. But you brought me to another place. And that is that I feel that Reiki, from the very moment that we begin the class, we step into these different levels of paradox, we call them. And I feel that one of the main parts of this practice is to bring people into a conscious awareness of paradox, that it's, and to show us that it's a natural occurrence, like that's how the world is really made. And though we could be somewhat a maker of our own lives, we are not the entity that allowed us to be alive or that gave us life, right? In a biological sense. And whatever that power is or was or is called, is beyond our comprehension. So the paradox is that we can feel that we can shape our own lives by our decisions, which is, as an aside, a big question mark in and of itself. but that, we have to accept just so that we are alive and that we, and that this quality we call life has been bestowed upon us, by something much greater than we can comprehend. So there's this really interesting paradox that you're pointing out, I feel, about, how human beings, recognize an entity that we might call God or Great Spirit or Reiki or, something greater than what we can comprehend, and at the same time trying to find the place where we actually have power over what happens in our lives, in our daily world. So I don't know, I'm just trying to figure out how to put this into language. And then all these different paradoxical situations come, like, for instance, why, if we are in service, do we have to deal with money? And why is it that we have hand positions when Reiki goes where it's needed? And, you know, there are all these different levels of paradox that I feel, as a part of the practice, Reiki brings to us, and it increases our capacity to hold the greater paradox that you're speaking of, which is kind of, you know, the basis of how did we come to be human?
Uh-huh.
Am I just totally off the beam or?
No. Oh, I mean, that makes sense to me. And you know, it's also true for me that, the paradoxes that you, delineated or mentioned in reference to our very beginning experience of Reiki have just, you know, expanded. And you know, this quality of mystery and this quality, and as you described, you know, concept of God or Reiki or Great Spirit as, kind of out beyond our comprehension, in one sense, unknowable. And at the same time, I think, you know, one of the also experiences or paradoxes is that our experience of God or divine, it can also be very personal. So, you know, we can say, for example, oh, I have a relationship with God, a personal relationship with God, and at the same time say, and God is unknowable. And, you know, one of the things that is so, I think, you know, part of our journey, for me, part of the journey is this ongoing quest for understanding, knowing that ultimately it's beyond our capacity, and yet there's a lot of room between what I know, what I think I know, or what I know, and what I know I can't know. There are still things that I can learn. I mean, you know, Einstein said, you know, he felt like the heart of science was an attempt to understand the mind of God. So it's like, you know, everything we learn about nature, the nature of being, in a sense, gives us a fuller picture of, you know, of this relationship with all that is. It's always going to be limited, and yet, every time, you know, our too small concept gets shattered and we're challenged to see something bigger, our understanding deepens. And, you know, one of the things that's been interesting to me in terms of, you know, understanding life is this concept of story and seeing how different cultures and religions and spiritual practices often have, a creation story. You know, where did humanity come from? And in that, what's its place in the order of life, and what's its call? You know, and, you know, so you use the word service, and, you know, so often that's a common theme in these creation stories, is that human beings are called to be of service, to one another, to be of service to creation, to the planet, to be of service to some greater ideal. And, and I feel like that's longing or that, and those questions just keep getting, really comes out of my, daily practice of Reiki. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. So maybe, back to a kind of more practical question, possibly. So do you feel that this practice, and I just in general call it Reiki practice, that we have a creation story?
Well, I think we have a limited creation story in the sense that we have a story of the origin of our practice. But I'm not consciously aware of, in a sense, kind of an ultimate creation story in that.
And do you, let's see. And so for you, a creation story would need to include, like, how did everything come to be, basically?
Well, I don't know if it's everything coming to being. Some creation stories seem to contain that. But I think, well, how humans came to be, how this planet came to be in the array of beings that inhabit it. That feels like those are more the dimensions of the comprehensiveness of what I would consider creation story.
And then, we're working on that, we could say. But, so then one of the other things about a cosmology is I believe that there is also an end to the story, like not an end to the story, but, that there is an understood goal, like, an understood, I think goal is the best word right now for me, that human beings are to follow in order to live a successful life. For instance, in some religious practices, there's a quality called enlightenment, and that seems to be the goal that people work for. Or in other things, it's a kind of a goodness of humanity, of being human, and that's a goal. So I'm just wondering, how you relate to that in Reiki.
So when I hear goal, kind of human life, that translates to me into purpose and meaning. It's like, well,
okay,
what's
purpose and meaning? Thank you. Much better.
And for me in Reiki, it's like, okay, it's one of the things that I ended up doing out of necessity, because very young in my practice, I was also teaching Reiki. And so I had to work hard at feeling like I was competent in terms of how I was explaining this practice. Uh-huh. And what happened was that, I kept going back to the word healing and exploring what healing meant. And it was very satisfying to me, and gave me an anchor to learn that the root of the word healing means wholeness. So then of course the question was, well, what does wholeness look like for the human being? And I would say, the aspects, the four aspects of the practice that you enumerated, healing practice, personal development, spiritual discipline, and mystic order. Then over time, you know, it's like I begin reflecting on that question of wholeness, healing, wholeness in relationship to, oh, kind of, you know, my physicalness.
Right.
And then my personhood, you know, so personal development. Uh-huh. And, you know, in a lot of the work in this, I would think was not, you know, it's like I wasn't so consciously directing it. I was just, awakened to the things that obviously seemed to hold me back as a person.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, it's like the next stage is, oh, okay, well, if I've got kind of a reasonable handle on that, I seem like a more or less healed person. Not that that ever ends, but, then what, you know, and then it, you know, it propelled me into looking at spiritual discipline and then looking at those two words and saying, well, you know, what is wholeness as a spiritual being look like?
Uh-huh.
And, so, you know, I keep asking this question in terms of meaning and purpose is, you know, what does wholeness look like for a human being? And, you know, in that exploration, I mean, it really propelled me more to study and, to explore, both my own religious tradition and some others, you know, basically looking for, connections and similarities and they're addressing this particular question. It's like, well, what's the meaning and purpose? And, you know, it's like, for me, for example, the concept of enlightenment is just, it's like, you know, somehow awakening to a level of understanding that then totally, you know, moment by moment, infuses one's choices and one's ways of thinking and one's ways of looking so that, virtues or qualities of, compassion and kindness and, you know, seeing others as the same as me and so, you know, turning one's life potentially more towards service, and, you know, one of the things that I think I observe is that when we get into the realm of, you know, the spiritual part of our person, it's hard to find language. And yet, you know, all religious traditions have have developed language. So, you know, I go to the languages that most resonate with me. I mean, one of the things that I realize is that it seems to be a quality of humans everywhere, all through history, that a certain percentage, at least of the population, asks these questions of my life. What's the human being's ideal or authentic or full meaning and purpose. And it, you know, humanity has plumbed this question, I think, since its beginning. You know, which for me is like this just longing of our spiritual self. Maybe we call that spiritual self our soul. But, you know, Thomas More in his book, Care of the Soul, says, you know, what the soul needs is an articulated worldview and a clear system of values and a sense of relatedness to the whole. And so, you know, it's like, I feel like Reiki awakens us to, by immersing us in it all the time, this connection with our spirit. And so it asks us to the energy, I guess, or the inclination, asks us to pursue this question. You know, what is the ultimate meaning? And, in my belief or in my faith, I think it's part of humanity to ask this question, and also to somehow within us are the seeds, or this, you know, the Quakers have this image of this, you know, and it is the nature of God. And so it's our connection with understanding. So we just keep asking the question. And one of the things that I love about the Reiki community is that, you know, we as a community, we keep asking these questions. You know, it's like, well, what does it mean to heal the body? And, well, what does it mean to be whole as a person? And, well, what does it mean to be whole as a spiritual person? It's, you know, it's a dialogue that is, I feel like, is getting more and more momentum. And probably what inspired you to address this theme?
Perhaps. So are you saying that as an entity wanting to develop to its next step, that Reiki as a movement needs to have its own language? So there's, you know, when I think about cosmology and what makes up a cosmology of a movement of thought, we could call it, there needs to be a creation story. How did the world come to be? There needs to be a purpose, a purpose for life, and then there needs perhaps to be language. It's unique languaging of the way mystery and daily life come together. Does that seem like what you were saying?
No. On this level, I don't feel like Reiki as a practice has to have its own unique language. I more feel like that it would be really useful for I'll say those who practice Reiki, the Reiki community, to allow each of us to have our own language of the spirit and listen, to the energy, and not get, you know, here's the thing for me. It's like in the realm of spirit, language by its is always going to be inadequate. And, right. And yet, you know, we have a wealth of language of the spirit, just, you know, in our human, history. And, you know, it's like one of the things that's interesting to me is the culture from which Reiki sprung, you know, which is very, in terms of spirit and language of the spirit, seems to have been historically very inclusive. You know, so the Aboriginal language of the Japanese people is what we call Shinto, which is a nature based, what we would call religion, of course, you know, connection, reconnection. So there's this deep, relationship with the natural world and really being a part of the, you know, this kind of ultimate interdependence of all that is in the natural world. And then at some point came Buddhism, which also was just accepted and integrated. Whereas kind of in the Western way of thinking, it's like, well, you can't do that religiously or spiritually. You're either this or that. But the Japanese people never seem to have that as a problem. You know,
right.
It's like they just, you know, and what Buddhism brought was this incredible awareness of the mind and how to work with the mind. I mean, this just incredible knowledge and awareness and experience. And, you know, in the Japanese culture, the Japanese people just integrated these things together. And so in a sense, they, you know, I imagine that their language then expanded. The language of spiritual things expanded. And then Christianity came, and the same thing happened. I mean, this integration and this capacity to, you know, to take this gift of, you know, kind of service and love and, forgiveness and, you know, just these other kind of qualities of spirit, of human spirit. And again, you know, the Japanese just put this together. And then again, there's this another expansion of their spiritual language. So, you know, for me, it's not about creating a new language. It's about standing in a place where we, are free to use and to hear this wealth of language of understanding of life and meaning and purpose. You know, just recently in the last few issues of Touch magazine, the British Reiki Association magazine, there was just a little article by somebody who had been traveling, a Reiki person who had been traveling, and she was talking about being in Japan and sitting down and talking to this elderly woman, and this elderly woman was saying, "Oh yes, we're born Shinto and we marry Catholic and we die Buddhist." And oh, what a wonderful picture of, you know, being able to use this incredible richness of language, of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as Reiki came to me, it really was, it had this quality of universal, mm-hmm. which is really at the heart of it. So that, you know, and for me, you know, the capacity then to be really universal in our holding one another and understanding this spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm.
And yet at the same time, being so connected in a way that we wouldn't maybe have been able to imagine before. You know, this is magical for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love this piece that you just did because it kind of relieves me of feeling like we have to invent another language.
That would be a great relief, wouldn't
really,
it?
Yeah, in order to be recognized. See, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. I believe that in our lifetime of Reiki, which is now going on 40 years, that we've seen Reiki grow from just this small, very private kind of practice to this, what I would call a worldwide movement with many different forms and philosophies of practice within Reiki. And yet there's something that binds us all together. So I see that, in my own opinion, that recently in the last 5 years, for instance, this, what is binding us together called Reiki is coming out to be more and more important rather than the differences. Not to ignore the differences, but to see this umbrella or this overarching connectiveness. And for me, that calls out a kind of awareness of what is Reiki actually. Do we have a structure, a philosophic or observed structure as human beings that allows us to place our experiences that we have in Reiki into our human experience and expand it? And that's one way that I think Reiki is calling out for the articulation of something I call a cosmology. And at the same time, I believe that from the groundswell of how many experiences are being made manifest every day in Reiki, that this also calls out for another kind of articulation. And my question is this desire for articulation something that we could observe and kind of ignore because our practice comes from our own experience anyway, and everybody will have their own individual cosmology or try to figure out why things are happening, and that's part of the practice. Or if it would be useful to have a kind of general idea of what Reiki brings to one's life and how to apply the experiences to the most benefit of each individual.
I think that's a big question.
It is a big question. I mean, it's one of my underlying questions for all these conversations because I'm just exploring it and kind of being out on the edge. You never know whether you're just trying to make something something that you feel, or if it's actually arising from what happens. And of course, there's this old adage that, you know, like to describe the elephant, you have all these people standing around the elephant, they feel each part of the elephant and their description is very different, but you have to take all of their descriptions in order to find a more accurate picture of the elephant. So this particular process, I just see arising all the time these days in my life. And I don't know, maybe my call is to consciousness about, like, instead of just doing it and having it be, doing Reiki and having it be a blessing in our life, can we also consciously try to describe it as human beings in order to really deepen our understanding of the whole picture? And is it useful?
Uh-huh.
I mean, maybe it's just a nice thing to talk about. I have no idea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, like everything, I think significant. It's always a two-edged sword.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like one of the things that I have observed and am interested in is you know, culture. And I feel like, you know, Reiki out of experience, then, you know, there's kind of a Reiki culture that emerges.
Uh-huh.
So we find words that best, you know, describe our individual experience, and then we kind of agree on them, you know?
Right.
And, you know, what drives us to do that? I mean, many things, but one of the things that drives us, I feel, always is, safety and comfort. You know, so, you know, it's a little bit hard for us to be, you know, an individual to be kind of hanging out there on our own with an experience that has touched us deeply. You know, the desire is to connect with other people who share that experience. So we can go, oh, you know, I'm not alone.
Right.
And, you know, help me understand the parts of this that I don't understand, because it's different and it's new and it takes me to areas that I don't have a context for. And so we come together and we just naturally kind of develop a language, an agreed upon language, and then, which is good because it meets this need, but then it can also become a limitation. You know, so I go to one Reiki group and I have an experience and I share it, and then they say, oh yes, that's this. That's what this means. That's our experience too. And I go to another Reiki group and I say, well, I have this experience. And they say, oh yeah, well, that's this. And that's what this means. And so then my experience then becomes, solidified or defined by that particular group's understanding.
Uh-huh.
So this is just interesting. So, you know, the language and the creation of language creates this place of kind of connection in another way and comfort and safety in my experience and a way to explore my experience. And it also can become, you know, a limitation. And the other part for me is interesting is that I feel like, you know, we're developmental beings. So we keep developing and we go through different stages. And what I might need in terms of, you know, definition at one stage is not what I need at another stage.
Oh, good point.
And so, it, you know, it's, you know, so for example, it's a question for me, often, for example, if a, you know, a teaching comes out from the American Catholic bishops, for example, about Reiki, it's like, well, which group is that teaching focused on? You know, in, if, you know, all Catholics are also like any people that are practicing a religion or a spiritual path, you know, they're all in developmental stages. So what happens if the teaching is limited in some way to a certain stage of development? So, you know, how do we, you know, if we're going to explore a languaging of, you know, kind of what Reiki is teaching us about the purpose and meaning of life, how do we, use the language in its usefulness and not hold the language in such a way that it then, becomes too defining of our experience, and there's not that space for the nuances of our experience that maybe are, you know, are pushing us or enticing us to another level of awareness where the language isn't adequate again. I mean, for me, this is just fascinating. And, you know, how do we hold and care for, you know, this, well, for me, truly, truly universal quality of this practice, and part of it, this universality, I don't know. I haven't really thought about this so much, but I wonder if part of this, the power of this universality is in its simplicity of content, you know, and, you know, how do we do this dance consciously so that, that we meet kind of all of the needs of our humanity in terms of our unfolding, you know, the need for safety and security and, oh, I feel safe with this group because they understand me, they understand my experience. And at the same time, you know, can the group be, in its language and its openness to language, be expanded enough to constantly, be open to this constant struggle to find the words that resonate with the individual to share their experience. And you know, these are my questions in the context of your big question. and you know, it's like one of the things that I love, you know, for example, that has happened, you know, is where, you know, groups of different Reiki practices have had to come together for one reason or another to find their commonalities, right. You know, and how that's has stretched everybody in those groups. I mean, because I've talked to people, right? You know, and it's been so wonderful and sometimes so difficult, you know, but they stretch themselves. And, you know, and I think that's, you know, that's, and so one of my assumptions is, and I haven't been in those groups specifically, right, in that direct way, is, you know, my assumption is that they really had to learn to listen to other people's vocabulary, and in this very kind of soft, open way, and not shut down because it wasn't their vocabulary, to really feel, oh, in some ways we're talking about the same thing and we're using different words. And so they were able to hold one another in that. And in truth, I don't know if Reiki needs its own kind of language of cosmology. I think what it has and what I think it needs and is this, you know, growing capacity to really always go back to the place where we are connected and we know we're connected. And so whenever we delve into an exploration of meaning and purpose and understanding of the human journey that we're all in together, that we bring this quality of Reiki of inclusiveness, you know, of this radical inclusiveness. So that we're really not requiring a certain language, but open to, you know, kind of attuning ourselves, becoming more sensitive, more open-hearted in the listening to the nuances where we can say, oh, yeah, different words, but yeah, I think we're talking about a similar experience. Let's keep talking about this. Hopefully that made some sense.
Yeah, for me, I don't want to trivialize it, but it comes back to this image of everyone trying to describe the elephant in their own language and from their own experience. And actually sitting down, these councils of Reiki people who come from very different perspectives and very different priorities, come together and find a match for their experiences. So, as an example, for myself, when, in the early days, my priority was to have a student, to encourage a student to practice, so that they would deepen their understanding of the value of the practice that they received. Yes. And it was only through this deepening exploration would benefit come for the world. And several masters in the late 1980s and early 1990s came up with this idea that Reiki was, in my words, in my vocabulary, a panacea for the world. Like if there were instantly 1 million Reiki practitioners, no matter how seriously they took the practice, this would be a benefit for the world. And I just thought, well, they're missing the point. That was my opinion. And 20 years later, or 15 years later, I'm just sitting here going, well, we're both right. And what I see is that if I had, trod on, you know, slowly and methodically through the forest of life and, initiated a few people here and there, and so did all the other masters, we would have a fairly small segment of the population introduced to Reiki. But what I see is that these other practices actually spread Reiki, and out of those millions of people who they contacted, say even 5% of those people became dedicated practitioners involved in the depth of exploration that I had as my priority. That increased the possibility by, I don't know, some enormous amount, exponentially. So I see that it's been the joining of all these different priorities of how people saw that Reiki would benefit the world, that it has come to this place where now I feel like we're on the threshold of, okay, we've got millions of people practicing Reiki of varying degrees of exploration. We've got a solid base of people who have practiced for, say, 30 years or over. And now what do we do with this? Anything? Or do we just keep on going? And I guess for me, it's not a change of priority, but it's a change of perspective of that priority. It's like, if I had an image of my priority, it would be people looking within, and kind of with their heads down, and as some people call it, gazing at their navel. And, and that was really my posture for, you know, many, many, many years. So now what I'm trying to do is just change that posture to be aware of my navel, so to speak, and the inner growth, but to look up and to see how does this benefit the rest of humanity. And I see that in their own way, these people, these masters who were wanting to initiate and take Reiki out and make it available to as many people as possible, that was also their motivation, but they came at it from a very different way. So it's just been my experience that if we live long enough and and we see the horizon long enough, that this joining will happen automatically. But I feel like it needs to happen as a conscious movement. Or anyway, that's what I would like. And that's why these conversations. And I'm wondering what your opinion is of that.
Well, it really, you know, in one sense, I would, yeah. So, I, you know, it's like I agree with you that, yes, practice is it. And the focus on that is, and I also agree with your analysis that the other people who put Reiki out there more. And I feel like in terms of, I feel like the practice is what awakens us. And so somehow if we can, in terms of, you know, the world, encourage practice, as you say, you know, it's, for me, it's not just an inner thing and then an outer thing. It goes, you know, it happens in its own cycles and kind of bounces back from one place to another. It's like, you know, when I heal something in myself from really looking at myself, then how I am in relationship with the world changes. So, so this is happening all the time. And now, you know, it's like I think we're getting to a point of asking, and what else can we do? You know, how can we bring Reiki into the world, more consciously? Yeah, I think that's good. And especially in terms of kind of a project kind of thing, you know, can we bring Reiki to places in need? You know, can we, you know, that kind of thing where where we break outside of our own kind of experience, you know, and the little bit of the world that we inhabit, most of us, you know. But at the same time, you know, there's need, you know, out my back door. You know, I think maybe what we're feeling, or you're feeling, I don't know, is a more kind of social ethic of Reiki. You know, what's Reiki asking us to do in the world as a social force for good and for healing?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's just part of the natural unfolding, as you said, of people doing it. And, you know, many of us practicing for 40 years or so, you know, it's like following these inclinations and then being able to look at, you know, people who are maybe younger or haven't practiced long or as long or whatever, and say, oh yeah, and this is part of Reiki too, you know, this calling to be more socially conscious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to act out what we know, this radical interconnectedness and interdependence of all life.
Thank you, Paul. Well, we're out of time, and this is a great place to stop. So thank you very much for your thoughts, sharing your thoughts and your ideas and observations.
Oh, thank you. It was just a lovely conversation to have with you.
Thanks. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.